Hello and welcome to another edition of Living with Dying. I'm really thrilled today to introduce Emma Gray, who runs a company called Rainbow Hunting. And as with so many people I've interviewed on this podcast, it's a wonderful idea, but it all comes out of a very sad beginning. Emma, would you like to start at the beginning and tell me about it?
Gosh, so I'm not very good at short stories, but I will try my very best. Thank you very much for having me. Yes, it is it's sad, but it's amazing as well because I feel like I get to help lots of people, which is a wonderful thing to be able to do. But ironically, I was a wills and probate lawyer for many, many years, never anticipated doing my own husband's probate in my 30s. He was a Royal Marine, so actually, when I say never anticipated, I think it did definitely cross our minds because he went to Afghanistan and he did some crazy stuff in his personal life. Down ski slopes and all the rest of it, as well as in his work life. So we were quite well prepared, but I don't think anything can actually prepare you. I think it's really difficult to understand it unless you've been there. And so when he got poorly, he got esophageal cancer. We knew that it was bad news from day one in 2013. Our kids were literally 3 and 5. And then they were 6 and 8 when he died in 2016. And as we got towards the end, because he had radiotherapy and chemotherapy, then we had a bucket list period where we did some nice stuff. And then they told us we would know before anyone else when it went bad because it would do the same thing again. So he struggled to eat. He was having the same kind of pain. He had more chemotherapy, more radiotherapy, some antibody drugs. Because he was young, they threw so much at him. And it did give us more time, but it meant he was very, very poorly. So my life as a lawyer went down part time and more part time and more part time as I was juggling the in-laws staying with me and the husband being poorly and not wanting me to care for him, but needing me to care for him and the children who were really tiny. And I remember so clearly turning around to work and being like, I'm gonna be in this day. And then Simon's got this day. And the HR lady was like, Emma, just go. You need to just go. And I was like, I can't stop work because if I stop work, I'm telling him he's gonna die. She's like, Emma, I think you need to stop work. And it was the best conversation ever because actually he died 2 weeks later. And those 2 weeks were weirdly quite happy because I wasn't carer. He was in the hospice. I could just be me without worrying about work and literally just worry about him and the kids, which sounds really strange because he was literally in his last days. But I turned around to them and I was like, I've spent 2.5 years in anticipatory grief. I'll be back in a few
Oh.
weeks. And they were like, take all the time that you need. And I took months off. I mean, it literally turned my world upside down. And then I went back to work. And then the old world wasn't the same without him in it. And very long story short, I'm now a therapeutic grief coach, focusing on kind of two things really. One is helping people with the mind monkeys around the paperwork so that they understand that they're not stupid, they're not lazy, they're not broken. Their body is in shutdown because it's really hard to do. That's why over half of people don't have wills. It's because it's actually really hard. And then more of therapy of kind of growing life around grief. But I've discovered that the grief is like the presenting problem. And often the work is the other stuff that because you're bereaved, you can no longer hide. And so all of a sudden, you think you're stuck in grief, and you kind of are stuck in grief, but actually, there's a huge amount of other stuff that's bubbled to the surface that has never been processed, which is where the work is. That is transformational and really amazing to watch people finding their own answers, really.
So it sounds like two distinct strings to your bow, but on the other hand, I guess they overlap, do they? Same
Yeah, they
people.
really do. And for a time it was difficult to work out which was the umbrella and which was under the umbrella. Especially as like I very much found it hard to say goodbye to the legal part of me. My husband had like carried me through doing tax exam on maternity leave and all the hard work I'd done for all the qualifications I'd done when I was in the legal world and all the times where it got on top of me and I worried about putting the wrong figures into the wrong forms and inheritance tax problems and all the rest of it. And then it wasn't until after he died that I gave it all up. But actually what I've realized literally only in the last 6 months is actually the grief is the umbrella and the paperwork is just a part underneath it. And I think there's three parts underneath it, really, because one's the paperwork, helping people sort that out. One's the emotions. And the third part is I love stuff like this, which is opportunities to talk and advocate and explain how important it is. I think, you know, I'm so thrilled to be here. Thank you so much, because I think this is so important that we normalize this.
It happened to us all.
100%. It's the only certainty for all of us. Spoiler alert.
And yet we don't really address it, do we? I've been actually forced by my children to put something down on paper about what I want for the future. And I've only been forced by them because they know what I'm doing here. So it's worked out quite well. But it's ridiculous that we all just put it off. Not going to happen to us.
No. And I think I really said it, and I run this free will challenge every year, and it comes up every single year, the same reasons why people don't do it. And often it's things like guardians, it's things like blended families, and it's things like thinking that I'm going to live to 100. So I've got plenty of time. I don't need to do it. But my husband died at 38, you know, and the one reason why people need to do it is often the reason they're avoiding it.
Because he was in the Marines, did that mean he was prepared and did have a will and you knew
what
he wanted?
Yeah, we did wills lots because of me being a boring lawyer. But, you know, I can remember doing my first will in my 20s, really quite young, early 20s. And then we did a new will when we got married, and then we did a new will when we had kids. And then we tweaked our wills when he got sick because we realised that the guardianship wasn't how we wanted it. So we changed it then. That was very important to me because I wanted, if anyone ever challenged it, I wanted it to have been his decision as well as my decision. So it meant a lot to me that he changed his will, even though the chance were that it was going to be my will that was going to be the important one for that. And yeah, he was very well prepared, but even then there was stuff that we hadn't done. And I think that's why I'm so passionate about it, because I am the positive guinea pig in that what he has left behind has been my practical and emotional handrail, which is the most amazing gift that anyone can give with the paperwork, but also within my old work as a lawyer. And now I'm an ambassador for a charity called Widowed and Young. And in the widowed community, the heartbreak I see when people haven't done it. And it's from ginormous to supposedly tiny, but it's never tiny because it means a lot. You know, like the ginormous stuff is very few people are in the same financial position after a bereavement of a partner, a life partner. They're either much worse off or they're much better off. And they've both got their challenges, which I know sounds weird, but actually, if you suddenly find you have a lot of money, it can be a bit icky because all you want is the person back. Or maybe you're loving it and then you're feeling guilty that you love it because actually you've only got it for this terrible, terrible reason. I'm so pleased that we're talking about it because I just feel like it's so important.
Can I ask another question about him though? I mean, do you feel you have information from him written down or not written down about how he wants you to bring up your children? Because that's quite an important thing that you probably don't write down, but it would have been in his head.
Yeah. He didn't write that down, and I do wish that we'd had more conversations. We had a few conversations and he made some changes because he was terminally ill. He could make changes. So, for example, he'd had a critical illness payout, which meant that our financial circumstances changed almost overnight just when he got diagnosed. So we went from not even being able to contemplate a private school to being him knowing that certainly once he died, my house mortgage would be paid off and I would have enough money to fund the kids' education. So one of his kind of like last things was to settle the kids in a school. And it has worked. Like the kids went there in year one and three, they're now 16 and 18, and 18-year-olds just finishing that specific school. And the 16-year-old decided to stay on because she's in the Royal Marine Cadets and she's going to finish in that school. So he kind of pick the school. But the other thing that he did, which I think very, very few people do, because it's so hard, and I mean, I've been trying to do it myself, and it is, so I think it's almost easier when you know you have a terminal diagnosis. But he left cards for their first birthday after he wasn't there, for their 13th, their 18th, their 21st, and a letter for when they got married. Oh, and the 18th actually is a letter, it's not a card. And in that, my eldest daughter's just turned 18, and it was a very, very emotional moment when she opened it and she read it, because I didn't know what was in it. I helped him write some of these things because he was very poorly at the end, but he also did gifts for them, and he did memory boxes, and he did these little video blogs. And in the video blogs, he explained what he'd put into the memory boxes. But the heartbreaking thing about those is, because he didn't do them until he was so poorly, none of us want to watch them because he's really skinny. And we now remember him as healthy, and so to watch them again will take us back to when he was poorly. But we really should, because I remember videoing some of the stuff with him, and we really should, because he explained like some of the stuff that he'd done, and it was eye-opening to me because he never used to talk about work. So he did up these questions, and I sat off camera and he was on camera, and I asked him these questions so he could share the story of his life, as it were, for the kids. So I think he did very well at dying well. And I mean, the only closest thing I've got is there's two books down in the corner of my study, and every now and then I write in them to the children. But it's really hard to do, because I'm hoping I'll live for ages. But I think it's quite nice whenever they do something big, I try and remember to just put a little bit of like, this is when we did this, and I was really proud of you, and I think you did really well. Or because we just don't tell people. And that was one of the things that was really heartbreaking, is after he died, especially within the male community, the people who told me how amazing he was, but had maybe not even told him to his face. And that's hard, because he never heard that.
That's what so often happens at funerals, isn't it? You just wish the person was there to hear the wonderful things that are being said about them. We're bad at that as well. We're bad at saying nice things to people's faces, aren't we?
100%. And I really try and encourage people, and I really try and do it with my children, because especially as parents, I think we're very good at, and even grandparents, you know, we're very good at criticizing, you know, bad table manners and say please, and you know, I just held the door open, you don't slam the door in their face, you know, all that kind of stuff. Whereas actually the moment they do hold the door open, thank you very much, that was a really kind thing you just did. And actually just reinforcing the compassion and the kindness, because I don't think there's enough of that in the world.
So let's move on to what you do for other people now. I can imagine coming to you would be a wonderful sort of comforting feeling, like a soft blanket being put around you to go through all the most awful stuff, which we call sadmin now, don't we? Because it's so true. It's so sad when someone dies. You have to do all this awful paperwork that you don't want to have to do.
So different things for the two different things. So I love what you said about the blanket, because the comment that quite often comes up is, you're very cozy, or you make this feel less scary. And that is my aim, you know, that's what I hope. Because actually I think there is a massive mind block just purely with the lack of knowledge. That can be scary on itself, and not knowing who to trust, that can, you know, who's going to be your lawyer? Who's just because they've always been the family lawyer, or they're retired now, and now you've got this other person, and do you really want them? Can be really big. So how do I do it? The therapy obviously is all one-to-one. And that's, just different. People buy packages of 6 or 10 or 12 or whatever it is. And that's like slightly separate. But with the paperwork, I run this free will challenge every year. I'm kind of thinking of making a little version of it where I save the videos. And if people, because I don't want people to have to wait for me to run it. And I've had 3 generations before now, like doing it together in a family and stuff. And it's quite sweet, actually. And it's quite funny hearing their messages when they each message with a slightly different age perspective on it, which is quite amusing. And the aim is that I tell people what goes in a will. I tell people the mistakes. I tell people why it's so important. I tell people what happens if they haven't got a will. And then I tell them how to get it done. So how to find a lawyer, how much it might cost, why a lawyer is better than the other options, and all the rest of it. And I give them a document, which I call a planner, which is also part of it, which has got everything I wish my clients had given me when they walked in the door when I used to be a lawyer, because the lawyers aren't therapists and they're not necessarily the best people to try and draw out all the information from you. What they want to know is what you want to achieve, and they can give you the legal options and the legal structures and help you draft it in legalese, which most people probably can't read their own wills. And actually, that is a really important point, is making sure that when you sign a will, the lawyer reads through it clause by clause, so you actually know what you're signing. I always used to do that with my clients, and I don't necessarily think everybody does. But the form's kind of got a bit about you. It's got a bit about your assets and your liabilities, and a bit about what's going to go in the will, because actually it's really important for them to know your family dynamics and whether someone might have a claim against the estate and all those sorts of things. It's really, really important. And then I have a little SADMIN course, which is an online self-paced thing. People can watch videos, there's checklists and templates and bits and bobs in there, but I also have a membership, because I found that doing the course itself, people buy stuff and then they don't do it, and that's not what I want. So the membership is literally, at the moment, it's just £19 a month, and it's got 4 co-working sessions where people can come live online, and I'm there if they want to ask any questions, and we go quiet on Zoom, and everyone just works alongside each other, which is a kind of way of co-regulating. And actually, TikTok, apparently, I'm not really a TikToker, but apparently TikTok have been trending #admin night, which is kind of the same thing. It's like finding like-minded people who know they need to do this life admin and just don't get around to doing it on their own. But also within the membership, I am getting an expert once a month. So I've had an accountant talk about budgeting. I've had a professional organizer talk about valuing personal possessions. And I speak occasionally about bits and bobs. And they all live in this portal so that people can watch them again. And I have one check-in session a month, so that if people are stuck on anything, they can come in a group. And actually, they learn a lot from each other. You know, it's really fascinating, the people who go, actually, I was my auntie's executor, or I was my mum's attorney, and actually you might want to. And it's really fascinating kind of enabling the community and them learning from each other. It's still very small, but I love running it, because I can see the connections, and I can see the relief when people realize they're not the only one stressing about this. It's amazing.
Is that purely for wills, or does that extend to probate?
Back in 2022, I actually trademarked SADMIN for courses and books, because I always wondered if it would become a bit of a thing. So it actually takes you through the legal stuff, so the wills and the powers of attorney, the health stuff, so the advance directive and the care plan, and then the digital stuff, practical stuff, like literally, have you told people where the stop clock is? You know, like the really, like, you don't think about it, do you? But they're really important things. And then we always leave the emotional stuff, like those letters and memory boxes and stuff and photos and all that kind of stuff and funeral wishes. They're all a bit more emotional, because people can go down a garden path on those, or they can bring up a lot and then people shut down and don't do anything. So I always try and do it in a specific order on purpose, so that you kind of get the really chunky practical stuff done first, and it gets more and more emotional as you work your way through. And they're kind of bite-sized videos, but there is like 5.5+ hours of content in it. So, but it's very imperfect. It's very me. So it's very normal.
That is covering the SADMIN. That's covering the
probate.
That's the SADMIN
stuff.
Contacting the banks and the telephone companies and all those awful things.
And I just think that it is so hard to do, because, and I feel for the professionals sometimes, because they can't win, because if they give loads of emotion and TLC, some people are like, I just want you to do it. Or if they're super, super practical, people are like, but they didn't even say condolences. And I really feel sometimes for professionals, because they've got to have the emotional intelligence to understand where people are in their grief and how they might want to be treated. So like, as part of the advocacy stuff I do often go into law firms and financial advisors and stuff and try and talk to them about how to be more grief aware and more compassionate to their clients, because again, I don't think we talk about it enough.
I think that's such a good point you raise. Everybody reacts differently to grief, yeah. Don't they? And we don't all want the same thing, but we do want the people around us to recognize what we want. It's a difficult one because we're maybe not giving off the best signals, but there are certain things we're dying for and other things we couldn't possibly want. And we hope other people will find that out somehow, don't we?
And I think what you say there is so true, because I often say that grief is as unique as the relationship you had with what you've lost. So it's going to be like a fingerprint, you know, it is going to be entirely unique. But as human beings, one of the ways we have to try and rationalize and understand is to relate it to our own experiences. So it's so common for people to go, oh, I know how you feel because, or my sister has had X, Y, and Z. And it's really hard, because if you're the person, you feel like minimized, you're like, actually, I just want you to say that's really rubbish. Like, that's really hard. That sounds really difficult. I don't really want you to compare me to somebody else. I think the bereavement is the worst bereavement that you've experienced. And what they're trying to do is to say, I understand, because I've had a really bad bereavement too, but it isn't the same at all. They're all different.
Doesn't matter what relative or relationship you've lost, it's unique to you, isn't it?
Yeah. And actually, the relationship can be so fascinating. And that's one of the things I say when I go into businesses. It's like, you know, it's not just the grandma who died. The grandma might actually have been the only one with parental responsibility. The mum might have died when they were three. That could be utterly massive. Or the grandma could have been a witch and they could have hated her. But unless you make some inquiries, you just don't know. So it's really, really important, I think. I think that relationship, you can't make judgments on the label of the relationship, I don't think at all.
Going back to you trademarking the word sadmin, do you think progress has been made since then? I mean, that was obviously quite clever of you to do it then, 2022.
Well, I'm a little bit worried, because I'm a little bit like, it's going to be like Hoover soon, isn't it? Like, it's going to be like everywhere. But are we getting better? I think we're getting better at talking about it. Whether we're getting better at actioning it, I'm not sure. But I'm quite pleased about that, because I still have a job. But it would be amazing. Like, I wish everyone had a up-to-date and current will. I wish everybody thought beyond the will to all the other stuff that really, really helps. I think we are getting better, but I find what I do a very hard sell sometimes. And like you said, it's not like I'm scary.
Because people want to put it off still.
Because they don't want to do it. Yeah.
I think we ought to be doing things sooner anyway. We shouldn't be thinking about when we die, really, should we? We should be thinking about when we become frail or when we can't live on our own. Our own homes, those sorts of things. And again, I suppose nobody really wants to contemplate that.
But also it's a grief, because it's a grief of the world you're not living in anymore. And you're having to acknowledge that you can only live in a different world and a different environment. And maybe you're really sad about leaving the family home or whatever. You know, it can have a lot bound up in it. But I think there's that point to acknowledge. But I think that you're right. I think we should be doing all of this stuff so much earlier, because it helps our day-to-day life running before you even get to the downsizing, moving into a care home, doing whatever those massive moves are that people might be doing later in life.
And aside from your wills and all the admin that you've done for yourself, have you actually written down what you want in terms of a funeral and that kind of thing?
I've written my entire funeral plan. A funeral. Yeah. But a little bit like with a birth plan. So the one thing, you know, lovely middle class people go to NCT classes and talk about all sorts of gruesome birth things. I kind of wish we did that with death too, and we had a death plan, because one of the things that scared me about my husband was how he would actually die. I knew he had cancer, but like, how was he actually going to die? What was going to happen? No one told me he would slowly sleep more, be awake less, that actually when his feet went blue, that was his body shutting down, how his breathing might change. Nobody explained any of that to me. And I think it's so, so important. But a little bit like with my NCT birth plan, which I started at the top saying, the only thing that I do not want you to not listen to is my husband stays at my head end. Other than that, this entire plan could be ripped up if it's not appropriate. But here are my wishes, because I was really aware that actually quite often it goes out the window. But what's really important is that people know your wishes. And so for the funeral, I've kind of done the same thing. And I had to send it to my parents and my sister and what have you. And I emailed it with a, don't get worried. There's nothing wrong with me. I'm not planning on doing anything silly, but I tell everyone else to do this. So here's my funeral. And I've included hymns and readings, because one of the things that my husband didn't do, he told me he wanted a military burial. He'd organized all this like legal paperwork and all the rest of it, but he hadn't given me one hymn or one reading or one prayer. And I just didn't think about it until afterwards. And the stress I had in a sandwich generation is I didn't just want it right for me. I wanted something in there for the kids. So I ended up putting that dragonfly little story in for the children. And I also wanted it to be okay for my in-laws, because they're both alive. And not having anything from him, the weight of responsibility was almost paralyzing. And I don't want that. So I've said to people, you know, like, you don't have to use anything that's written down by me, but hopefully it gives you a little bit of an idea.
That was wonderfully well organized for someone who's
No, everything's not that well organized. I don't have powers of attorney, so I'm just keeping it real here. I'm about to do them, but I was waiting for my elder daughter to turn 18, which she has now.
Well, it's lovely to talk to you, Emma, and I'd like you to spell out the email address where people can find you, the website address, please, before we finish.
Thank you. It's been so lovely. So my website is literally Rainbow Hunting. So it's www.rainbowhunting.co.uk. And you can pretty much find everything you want from there. There's a contact thing. It's got my email. It's got my social media and all the rest of it. So you can find all the rest from the website.
Brilliant. Been lovely to meet you. Thank you ever so much.
So lovely. Thank you so much.
Death is never easy, but there are ways we can help each other through it. And if you've found any of these episodes helpful, please think about liking and sharing. And if you can help spread the word by telling just one other person, thank you. And a huge thanks to Joe Barrett, without whom these podcasts would simply not be possible. You can contact us on hello@livingwithdying.co.uk.